Zach Gander and Steve Gander on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and on podcast at excellentcultures.com. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining in Seattle, and when the sun shines in Seattle, everybody does
it. That is absolutely right. And I did not open up the show today with calling you the inimitable.
Just let it go right by. Let it go right by.
Trying to.
Our guest is inimitable.
You cannot be imitated, Steve. Steve.
Unimitatable. Steven Luis Gandra. Unimitatable.
Steve, you picked up some followers on Twitter this week.
Yeah, I did. Well, it must be because I'm in unimitatable, inimitable.
Inimitable.
It's because of all those lies you were telling on the air last week.
Yeah. Well, either way, you picked up some followers on Twitter. We want to thank Jillian Music for that, for tweeting about the show and talking about you. She did, however, leave me out, who is the host of the show.
Well, that's okay. All right. You're not inimitable.
That's right. I'm not. That's exactly right. But
Do I have to move away from the mic when I laugh?
Yes, because listeners, we did let Steve know today that I've been listening to some of the podcasts, checking up on stuff, and his laugh is definitely happening on the microphone. It's a little bit high, so we're gonna be really conscious of that, so we don't hurt your ears anymore. But we're excited about what's going on right now. We are, Excellent Cultures is, doing some new work with Coast Management Systems. Is that true? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, doing lots of work with Coast. In fact, our guest today is real good friends with the CEO of Coast. A great property management firm here in the Northwest. We had their CEO on the show, actually their COO on the show not too long ago, Sean Hoban.
Yep.
But lots of work there. Great company, really, really turning their culture from good to great. And doing it in a very exciting, cool way in an industry that serves both the underemployed with their affordable housing and the gainfully employed with their conventional housing divisions.
Yeah, they have some great housing in my neighborhood in Capitol Hill, Seattle as well. So when we had him on the show, I looked all that stuff up. It was very cool.
Yeah,
it's also a good show, guys. You can check that out at podcast on our iTunes at just search Biz Culture Matters. Also, we do want to engage everybody today. If you're listening, you got questions for our wonderful guest today, who Steve's going to introduce here in just a minute. But go ahead and send us emails at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com, and we'll get back to you on those right away. Hey, we may even air some. And we have been dropping a few secrets, too, of some new things we're going to be doing for some contests and stuff for you guys. I was on the phone yesterday with our one of our friends that I'll leave her nameless because she'll be on the show very, very soon. But coming up with some great things for you guys to win, for you to engage in, and for you to nominate your boss or managers for as well.
Do I get to nominate my boss if he or she is a lousy boss?
I think you do, actually. It's going to be for the bosses that you love and the bosses you hate at the same time. However, you would be the one mentioning them by name, not us.
Okay, so, I'm not mentioning any names.
Yep.
You know, I just signed the legal release, and my lawyer's listening to the show.
Steve, unfortunately, your only boss is your wife.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a few of them. You need to tell that to all the rest of our team.
All the teenagers. Yeah. Anyways, why don't you introduce our guest? Because we have a great guest today. Pat Chestnut's on the show, and we're excited about that.
Pat Chestnut from AAOA Healthcare, one of the most knowledgeable guys I've ever met about the whole healthcare, conundrum that we're involved in, thanks to our government.
It's like the Kardashian conspiracy. talked about that on a few shows ago.
It certainly is.
If there was a real what do we call those shows? Pat, what are those shows? They're not real-time shows. I forget what they are. Reality TV.
Reality TV.
We need to do a government and healthcare reality TV show.
I think that would be a nightmare at this point.
it'd be a big hit.
Yeah.
The new scary movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It certainly would. Anyway, met Pat a while back and had the great fortune of doing some work for his company, AAOA Healthcare, headquartered there in Kirkland, Washington area. Great company, recent recipient of the 100 Best Companies to Work For in the state, previous recipient of Family Business, top of the pile.
A-plus Superior Rating, Better Business Bureau.
Yeah, they've done a lot of great things as a company, both as a family business and just as a business competing against everybody's, other businesses in the state.
Right.
Much to the contribution of Pat as their leader and their leadership team. Some good guys at AAOA, and we'll give him a chance to tell you a little bit about their business in a second. But I wanted Pat to be on the show for a while because Pat comes from a background that kind of started at a family farm, was a college athlete, learned competition the good old-fashioned way,
yep.
and has done just an exceptional, made an exceptional impact in the marketplace, working for the benefit of the good guys. I mean, the little guys who are out there working hard to afford health care.
Right.
You know, Pat and his firm are an advocate, you know, for that and doing it in a way that's helping a lot of people.
Right.
And, you know, not as a result of the contributions that come from our illustrious governments, either at the federal or the state.
I'm going to throw this out, too. Off air, I asked Pat to name my health insurance and put them on the air because I've been very, very unhappy with them over the last 2 years. We're not going
to
do that.
Well, that would apply to everybody's health care.
But, Pat, why don't you tell the listeners what you told me, that who should we really be pointing the finger at with this stuff?
Well, I think there's a lot of places to point the finger today. There are a lot of promises that have been made, and there's no guarantee that these promises will come true. And one of the things I remind everybody is this is not new.
Right.
We actually did this back in the mid-90s, and we're revisiting that whole idea of healthcare reform. So a lot of this is the same old stuff. We're just doing a little faster, a little bigger.
Yep.
And I think the crash will be just a little bit more magnificent.
Oh, man. Thanks for that.
So
the good news is...
The good news is there's good guys out there at AAOA
absolutely.
That have an eye on what's going on or figuring it out and are developing futuristic things now to serve their clients and to serve their clients' employees in a way that, you know, lessens the government paraphernalia rather than increasing it.
Pat, how are you guys doing that?
Well, I think we do it a couple of specific ways. One, we are committed to innovation. But I think more importantly, our staff, we're a family-owned company. We've got three generations in the company. But we also have a lot of people that aren't family members that we call the extended family.
Right.
And our folks are really dedicated to taking care of family businesses. Because what a lot of people don't realize here in the state of Washington, it's sexy to talk about the info space, the aerospace, and the open space.
Yeah.
But they forget the small space, that family business. That's where 75% of the companies in this state are.
Wow.
And they are the ones that really drive employment and growth for the state of Washington.
Exactly. I never knew that. I didn't realize that Washington State, with our Microsoft, Amazons, and everything, that 75% is family-owned business.
We're a really unique state because we're very diverse. And we're not a state that's dominated by one or two large employers in every corner of the state. You know, across the state of Washington, you have 18 microclimates. You've got a variety of industry. We ship the world.
Yeah.
And we are a world trading partner.
Yep.
Most states don't have anywhere near the type of just economy and business that we do at the Pacific Rim. So I think that's something that's really unique for us in this state. But I think we need to protect that, and we need to realize we got to keep a level playing field for the little guy.
Right.
So that it isn't just the big guys have all the gravy and the little guy gets the end of the potato there.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's my favorite point, and that's why I'm glad we're going to be talking about this stuff today, because that's important.
Well, the mission of the show is to help the good guys win.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what Pat's doing.
Right.
You know, he's helping the good guys win. So, Pat, tell us a little bit about – tell our listeners a little bit about AAOA, what makes you guys different, why you do what you do, and how you do it.
Well, AAOA Healthcare got its start back in 2004, really as we started to look at association health plans and how we could bring groups together to leverage their collective purchasing power. And we knew that we could do that, but we also needed to deliver some of the technology and some of the same purchasing strategies that large companies have. Unfortunately, in the small market, it's been very unfair because they haven't had that. So with our association plan, we brought in a lot of technology that you'd only see at a big company to help small businesses be able to administrate their plans, buy like the big guys. And we introduced a thing called fixed administration, which took all of the administration, agent commissions, and locked that in on a level basis.
Awesome.
So year to year, as claims cost goes up, which is where the claim, where the cost in healthcare is, none of those other things went up, which is something big companies had done in self-insurance. It had never been done at the small company level,
right?
Because somebody had to build the technology for it.
Right.
And to have the technology to administrate it, that was one of the areas we started. We built a revolutionary platform that we operate today. And we deliver innovation at the small group level that in many states isn't even done at the mid-size group level.
Wow. And where do we want our listeners to connect with? AAA? AAOA Healthcare? Sorry. There's so many A's.
Yeah, the AAOA stands for Affiliated Associations of America.
Okay.
And what we've done, we've brought a cooperative platform for a lot of different associations to come together and leverage together. So they don't have to steal each other's members.
Right.
And but AAOAhealthcare.org,
okay.
They can go there and they can see we have 104 plan options. And I think most importantly, we have our own internal consultants that work with companies. And these are all people with business experience in small business.
Right.
So they understand what it means to make a payroll. They understand what it means to have employees and come to work and have somebody that hasn't had a good day or a family member sick or struggled dealing with the system.
Right.
So I think that's been rewarding. And I think part of the journey of that we've had is that we've been recognized in a lot of ways. Our company has earned a Platinum Service Award for 5 consecutive years.
Amazing.
And nobody in the country has won it 5 consecutive years.
Awesome.
And I think that's a commitment that you can see in our people and the way they work. And we really try to make it simple. And our number one goal is to improve the employer and employee experience in the healthcare system.
Excellent. We are going to go to our first break, but that was a great start to the rest of the show. Stay tuned. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We're on with Pat Chestnut, AAOA. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
Hey, we're back at Biz Culture Matters with Pat Chestnut of AAOA Healthcare. One of the reasons that I wanted Pat to be on the show is not just because AAOA, under his leadership and the leadership of his team, are so committed to helping the good guys win, which he told us about a bit on our last segment, but Pat is also quite committed to the larger, you know, industry, not just the insurance industry and the healthcare industry, but the whole industry of sales. University of Washington has one of the few universities in the nation that has a certified sales program at the Foster School of Business. And what you'll find out as you learn more about what's going on there and Pat's contributions there as a mentor and advisor and a board member is that they're kind of redefining the whole world of sales. I mean, this negative perspective of sales is about coming up with a creative way to get somebody's money and run and hide it is being transformed at the Foster School into what it was really intended to be, a level of serving clients and serving each other
right.
in a way that creates value for all parties, you know, involved. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing at the Foster School, Pat.
Well, I think I found out about the Foster School of Business accidentally, and I think I need to tell the story, Steve, because my daughter graduated from the Foster School of Business and Finance.
Nice.
About 2 years ago, and at her graduation party, around the barbecue, somebody mentioned this sales certificate program. And of course, I've been working with a number of CEOs in Puget Sound, and we've been talking about, you know, what is that ideal sales candidate? What is that person? Because sales is no longer about manipulating people to buy something.
Right.
Now it's about helping people crystallize their needs, find out and really discover all the areas and blending technology with product, with service, and really goes all the way across any company. And in that discussion, they dropped the bomb that there was this program at the Foster School of Business. So the next day I called the professor, went over and met with Jack Rhodes, and then told Jack I'd love to come in and sit on classes. Found out the textbook he was using. We had lunch and he gave me the name of the textbook. Went straight to the university bookstore and bought the textbook, went straight home and read it three times, and found that it was back to the old days of sales training, that a lot of things happened in the 70s
right.
that had become new again. But really what I found is they were helping these young people understand that sales wasn't a gimmick. Sales was really something that you had to learn how to serve the people you're working with. And as I got to know some of the students and watch them in the classroom, it became very clear to me, this is the next generation, and every company is selling.
Right.
Whether you're the CEO or whether you're the janitor, you're selling for the company.
Right.
Because you're projecting the image, you're sending the message. And so I've gotten involved. I've been on the board of the sales certificate program now. And have enjoyed that, have met some phenomenal people from around the country. The board members there come from all over the U.S. That's how much attention this program has gotten. And 100% of the graduates out of that program leave the school with a job every year.
Wow.
Wow.
And we're fortunate this year we've got three of the sales certificate graduates working for our company. And they have been just a phenomenal contribution to our company, to our culture, and to everything we're doing. And it's really been a lot of fun to have them join us. And
that's fantastic.
That's all those bright, fired up, high energy young people that I bumped into the last time I was hanging out with Pat and his team at the Washington Best Businesses Banquet. These guys really got more energy than you could ever imagine.
Well, and
brilliant.
Yeah, and brilliant. But I'll throw a, you know, a little feather into that hat as well at Foster Business School. I have two people I know that graduated this year, and they both left with jobs.
The Foster School of Business does a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
When you look at the number of graduates in the various programs, in the sales certificate program, they place 100% of the students.
Wow.
In the accounting, they're placing like 95%.
Right.
And you look across that school, they are placing an incredible number. Where most universities place 40%, they're in the high 80s, if not 90s.
Right.
And the ones that aren't placing are usually going on to further their education.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. Well said. So this is our series, as listeners, most of you know, on developing cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement. And as an individual who's had the opportunity to witness firsthand what Pat's got going on with his team at AAOA, we wanted to get his view on, you know, what is a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement, and how do you do that in an industry that is so full of, I won't say government corruption. I'll just say politics. I'll say so full of politics.
Government obstacles.
Government obstacles. There you go. You know, forget that. We can edit that government corruption.
Nope, we're not editing it. It's not coming out. Now I'm talking about it.
So full of politics.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's and well, I want to throw in too, because we didn't highlight this enough at the beginning of the show, that Pat, that AAOA was last year, or this year, 2013, one of the best companies to work for, awarded that. And that means you have something to say and share about this issue of culture and everything Steve's asking.
Well, we were honored. That selection process is based on your employees being interviewed and providing feedback. And I think that says a lot about our members, our team members. They like working with each other. We are working in an absolutely incredibly difficult time. This is a tough business to be in because change is daily, hourly. There is nothing for sure. There are no rules. They kind of make up the rules each day and put out a PowerPoint and call that the new law.
Sorry, I'm laughing, but it's...
But it's
we all feel the rest of us feel the repercussions of that, and so
We've been dealing with it since they passed the law.
Yeah.
And 25,000 regulations later.
Yeah.
If you can imagine the stress and strain on the people that have to do the work behind the scenes, computer programs have had to be completely redone. Everybody's job has had to change. Security, privacy, every day the pressure and the stress is there. But our team has done an outstanding job, and we've done some things to make sure we get the right culture. We clearly have made some decisions about 4 years ago, and those decisions were we were going to build a first-class culture because we saw that as what's needed. It's not my dad's company anymore. You don't get the 30-year pin. You don't have the 5-year business plan. I mean, everything's based on a forecast now, and things are moving at the speed of light.
Yep.
So we had to adapt a business culture. And I'm no spring chicken, so I like to say that I had to adapt to that. I had to make some changes.
We know for a fact that Pat has adapted and made changes because we have data that proves that Pat has adapted and made changes.
Awesome.
And done a great job of it.
Are you going to share Pat's dirty laundry now? Is that where you're going?
I'll share that myself.
Okay, good.
I think that's one of the key points and when we discuss culture. And I'm in a group with other CEOs, and we spend a lot of time on this area.
Yeah.
Talking about how do we deal with this, because we've got the baby boomers, we've got the millennials, we've got all these generations coming together. There's a lot of conflict in the workplace.
Yeah.
People's different viewpoint of what work is and how hard you work and what you do and Facebook and all the social media and all the other stuff. The radar screen is full of bogeys.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we started to look at the culture, I made a decision that I was going to take the risk and put myself out first. And so what I did is... We contacted Steve, and I told Steve, I said, this is risky because I'm an old school guy, but I said, let's throw me on the fire. And
old school college baseball player.
There you go.
And an old catcher, so really risky.
Catchers get dirty, in case you're not a baseball fan.
Yep.
You know, catchers get dirty. They also tell everybody else on the field what they're supposed to do. Yeah, they're the captains.
So we jumped in and took the plunge, and but it also meant that I had to be willing to change, and I was committed to really do this. This was something that isn't just a fad. It was something that I said, if we're going to make a long-term company, we have to do this, and I owe the generations behind me to
it's beautiful
to set it up.
And that is that those are the 36 years of excellent cultures, and Steve in particular doing work. That's the 100% success rate, is the CEOs and the leaders that go, I'm going to put myself out. And I'm going to change. I mean, our three-step process, the first step is looking in the mirror, and then you got to throw yourself on the fire. And if they don't get past that step, they don't work with us anymore, and they don't move forward. I mean, I was a part of a corporation, an existing business that excellent cultures went into, and they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. And that's a bummer. Like, that's the bummer. So, Pat, appreciate that. And this is the fruit of that. 2013, one of the 100 best companies to work for, because leaders will go, I'm going to put myself on the fire first.
Well, I'm going to put myself on the fire, take the MRI, get feedback from my people under the bridge of anonymity with data that tells me where I need to improve and where I need to change, and then be transparent enough to go after going to work on it and, you know, take the darts if they're darts and turn things around into that which can be more positive.
Yeah.
And this was a great opportunity for us because our entire company is driven by analytics.
Right.
We have put in a system of measurement on every employee at every step at everything they do. And all of our employees have learned how to use the analytics to be better.
Right.
And so when I found out about Steve's model that would come in and it wouldn't be a feel-good, you know, Dr. Touchy, it was going to be, you know, here are the analytics.
Right.
That made a lot of sense to me.
Right.
And but it also meant I was going to have to be relentless, because you have to put your own ego aside.
Exactly.
Because you're going to take some hits.
Right.
But you also have to be relentless with the rest of the staff. And for me, it meant family.
Yep.
Because I've got family and leadership, and I had to be relentless on them.
Right.
That they, too, were going to take the same journey.
Exactly.
And that was probably one of the biggest obstacles to overcome.
Yeah. And it takes an amazing humility within the leader, especially when you've got family generations. I mean, family businesses are some of the toughest that we have dealt with in the past. They're the hardest to get that transformation happening. But at the same time, the great thing about it is, like you said, number. What is it you say all the time, Steve? People. You can lie about numbers, but...
People can lie about numbers, but numbers never lie about people.
There you go. All right, guys, we have to go into our second break. You are on and listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. We'll be right back with Pat Chestnut, AAOA.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at ExcellentCultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
And we're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We have Pat Chestnut from AAOA Healthcare. And listeners, plug in, send us an email at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. We want to have conversations that you're having. We want to be involved in with what you're doing. And last segment, if you missed it, Pat really shared the transparency of a leader, of what it takes to move organization and a organization, especially a family-run organization, to the next level of laying it all out there, throwing your cards out there, putting yourself on the fire and going, I'm ready to change. Let's do this together. Steve, let's go into your next segment and next thoughts of where you want to get from Pat.
I want to kind of drop back just a little bit, because just today, as you remember, in the process of developing our next generation of content for leaders and businesses and the clients we serve, we were revisiting one of our old podcasts when we interviewed Jack Hollis, the VP of marketing for the Toyota National Marketing Division, formerly the senior exec of the Scion division of Toyota, and we were listening to Jack's interview, and he was, you know, who, by the way, won the highest employee engagement in all of Toyota by their own internal survey when we were working with them at the Scion division.
Right. And that's crossing cultures, because Toyota's very Japanese culture into American culture, so that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a global company.
Yeah.
But what Jack told us was that, first of all, that the three signals of a bad culture was a culture where people were thinking, talking, believing, acting like it was all about me. Secondly, that they had foggy goals and foggy vision as opposed to clear ones. And thirdly, that they were either delaying or withholding or sharing their opinions.
Right.
And then he also told us that from his perspective that there's only really two things that you can change. One is your attitude, and the other is your effort.
Right.
And that when you take
you have control over
those things. And he shared with us that he learned those when he was playing on the national championship baseball team at Stanford.
Yeah.
That it was about attitude and effort, and that's where you put your focus.
Yep.
Now, in listening to Pat's story about essentially becoming, you know, transparent himself and using the data as a vehicle, a lot of people have surveys. I mean, in fact, most of the companies we talk to these days, the people have survey-itis, or survey fatigue is even a better way to describe it. Survey fatigue, there's surveys every place. I mean, I bought a bunch of stuff at Home Depot, planting, you know, a bunch of trees at the house last week. And I might say that Home Depot could really take advantage of excellent culture, except for one good manager that I met at a local location who understood what culture was all about, but she was frustrated because of the rest of what was going on. But I mean, before I even finished the transaction, before they finished the delivery, you know, I got this call about please take the customer, you know, customer survey. And I mean, I was so angry, I wasn't going to take a survey, no matter what.
That's when you should take the survey.
Yeah, I know, but I was too busy undoing the problems that they created in the meantime. But then, I mean, you got this one individual who made a difference,
right.
And she made such a difference that I'm happy to take the survey. But, you know, we've got all these surveys, but it isn't about the survey. It's about what attitudes and what effort takes place following the survey that makes the difference. And that's what I think, you know, Pat has done such a good job of demonstrating.
Yep.
Pat, tell us a couple of, insights that you got, changes that you saw that you needed to make in attitude and effort as a result of what you learned in the process.
Well, I think the first thing I learned is I needed to pay attention maybe to some of the smaller things. Being an old baseball player and a catcher, I'm an overachiever by design, and I'm going Mach 1 with my hair on fire. But one of the things I learned is I needed to sit back a little bit more and observe some things. And I needed to listen a lot closer to the we word than the I word.
That's huge.
Yeah, very
good. And I think what it really, really told me is I grew up, you know, learning you lead by example and you lead by hard work and you walk the walk the walk in your moccasins and other people follow that. And what I really found is that wasn't what people would do. And so I really needed to just stop a little bit and really set back, look at it. I needed to look at how I reacted and what I did, because that had a lot bigger profound impact than I realized.
Yeah, that's very big.
And so as we started to really change some of that, or as I made a conscious choice to do that, we really saw the boat start to turn a little bit.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Do you hear those two key words, conscious choice?
Conscious choice.
You know, I made a conscious choice.
Well, so the other conscious, the thought behind that is the off of me into we. Steve and I are in the midst. We're in the midst of creating this new change curriculum for excellent cultures for the future of our company, of helping other companies. And you just mentioned those two things.
And touching the hearts and minds of the millennial workforce.
Right.
I mean, we've got new folks coming on board, any company, that learn better by playing a video game than they do reading a textbook or listening to a boring boss give a lecture. Yeah. Speaking of myself,
and playing video games together.
Yeah,
you're doing missions together in video games now. I mean, I'm Generation X. Nobody talks about Generation X anymore.
No, you guys are now.
You've been
old
forgotten.
Fogies. You're old fogies.
You're roadkill.
Yeah, exactly. We were the ones that decided we're not going to do what you tell us to do, and then the millennials decided we're going to find value in service, and
then we're going to do whatever we want to do.
And then we're going to do whatever we want to do. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't herd very well, and
they kind of
ran over the X group.
Yep.
And now the X group is looking at them as the slackers.
Right.
and the baby boomers are looking at the Xers like you finally got it.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true.
But it is an interesting dynamic that you really have to pay attention to the generational aspect. And I think that's something they didn't teach in business school.
They didn't teach
that in all my college classes that I took. In fact, since I've been working at the University of Washington, I'm jealous at some of the classes these kids have today. They have some pretty cool classes that, you know, I've threatened to go back to school just to take because I think they'd provide some great insight.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing about the culture that I think was really important is, as a leader, I have to be ready to embrace change, and I have to be willing to embrace change. And I have to make sure that I don't let that fall off the wayside and be a fad thing.
Right, exactly.
And I've got to keep that on the forefront of the discussion with the staff and family members.
Exactly.
And I will tell you, it's been interesting because my wife is a VP in the company.
And she can be outspoken.
A lot more so since we started the culture stuff. But I think it's really been good because she knows it's okay to say you're out of bounds or you're off focus because I am relentless in my drive.
Right.
And I know that about myself and I recognize that. But I also don't want paralysis from analysis.
Yep. Yeah.
I've got to keep the organization moving forward. We've got to meet the changing environments. And, you know, anybody can manage a company, but revenue takes inspiration.
That's very true.
And passion.
That's right.
And you've got to bring that to the company because anybody can manage the shop. But in this world, you know, the world kind of changed.
Yes, it did.
In the last 5 years, I mean, the speed of light, the competitive nature of all business.
Right.
And that means you've got to change. And that was really kind of an epiphany. And when I met Steve, we really started talking about culture and really saying, you know, what's that legacy you leave? And are you going to be able to breed that culture? We had a bad culture at one point.
Yeah.
That's what forced me to reach out to Steve.
Right.
And you know, we gave some people some opportunity to go some other places. And we brought in people and have worked really hard to build that nucleus. And now it's kind of become a self-training a situation in the culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you get it sustaining itself, it makes a huge difference.
Let me throw this out too because I love how you worded something. We gave people the opportunity to go elsewhere. And I think that's the fear of a lot of leaders of, am I going to have to make these calls? Am I going to have to let people go? Am I going to have to this? Many leaders face that change. But I think the great thing about this process through Excellent Cultures and in the risks that you've taken, Pat, is people get to self-select. They really do make those decisions for themselves. And they're all, I'm on board with this next level change or this thing, or I'm not. And it's never forced. It's never pushed.
We can't support failure.
Exactly.
That's right.
And part of it is we've got to get over our fear of saying this isn't working.
Right.
And what we've really noticed, there is no meeting after the meeting anymore.
Right.
People are happy when they come to work. People want to be there. The staff interacts, and I think that's, you know, from a leader standpoint, it's lonely at the top.
Yep.
It's why I'm in a CEO group because a lot of people don't understand what we have to go through.
Exactly.
The responsibility we have, and I look at this and take this really to heart that there's families.
Yeah.
There's mortgages.
That's right.
Those are the kind of things I have to worry about every day. Am I making sure the company is vibrant so these people have a future? But I think the other part of that is this a company I'm enjoying, and is it returning my passion?
Exactly. This is one of my favorite interviews we've done in a while. I say that every week. I don't say that every week.
No, you don't.
I don't. We got to go to a break. Our last segment here with Pat Chestnut of AAOA. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
You're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We are, unfortunately, at the tail end of our great interview with Pat Chestnut of AAOA. We just finished up that last segment, guys. You can get on excellentcultures.com or you can search on iTunes for Biz Culture Matters, and our show is going to pop up, and it's going to be on literally the day that it airs on the radio. So make sure that you catch up if you're listening live right now and you need to get back to this information, because Pat Chestnut has really been transparent and how leading change in a culture, what it feels like, what it looks like, how you go through it as a leader, how you make those tough decisions, and all that stuff. It's been very, very good. Thank you, Pat. We appreciate it.
So, Pat, you've been around a lot of businesses in your years. You know, you've worked for some. You have run your own. You have clients that are all businesses. What do you see are the danger signs? I mean, how do you know that a culture is starting to get bad? What are the scary things that you want to encourage other CEOs to watch out for and stay away from?
Well, you know, that's really kind of a tough question, because I was pretty blind to it until we really brought you in.
So blindness is the first thing you want to watch out.
You know, it's always if you can not admit you have a problem, that's always number one. I think the first thing and the first warning sign is, if you aren't thinking about this, you're in trouble, because there are collisions occurring in the workplace. I think the biggest warning sign for me is when I heard you talk about the meetings after the meetings.
Yeah.
And I started watching that we're setting goals and objectives, and we had people involved in them. There were meetings after the meetings, and then people were doing everything possible not to go in the same direction. I think the other thing that we started to see was, we saw a lot of our young people just withdrawing.
Mm.
And I think that was a huge problem. And then we saw some moral lapses with some of our consultants. And that to me is probably the most alarming, because integrity and the moral responsibility of the company I take, I can't sleep at night over those kind
of
things.
Well, that's right. What can kill a company. I mean, that's what killed Enron. I mean, that's what killed so many others. I mean, those moral lapses and redefinitions of the word integrity is what kills companies.
Right.
And you know, the nice thing is, we had a lot of analytics on employee productivity. So we saw the analytics start to bend and go negative, as we call them, or neutral. And we said, okay, something's not right. We read all the books. We put management both family and non-family management team members through, you know, various skill sets. We did trainings, and it really kind of felt to me, this is just the same old stuff,
right?
That's going nowhere.
Right.
And my dad used to always say that if you know, the definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over.
That's right.
And expecting a different result.
Right.
And if I really wanted something different, what was I going to do different? And the risk was to say, let's do an evaluation. And let's get that evaluation. Let's look at the analytics. And I've talked to a number of other CEOs to say they would never do that. They don't want to be subject to that. And to me, I want to be subject to that because if I want to get better, then I've got to know. And the old thing, a dog in the hunt doesn't know he has fleas.
Well, right,
I'm pretty much an old school guy when it comes to that, that we got to just back up and do the, we got to find the fundamentals and do the fundamentals.
Right.
And that starts with, let's get an evaluation where we were.
Exactly.
Yeah. So a CEO who is blind to the fact that they can improve is your first danger sign.
Well, I think if you don't think you can improve, that's the first danger sign. I think CEOs today have to understand this is the speed of light. You know, you look at the big companies out there, CEOs are lasting 26 months or whatever it is. You look at how they've descended on Steve Ballmer like he was horrible.
Right, exactly.
That's a wonderful company. It's done wonderful things for Puget Sound.
And for the world.
And for the world.
Yeah.
And I think you really have to say the world has changed. Things are different. The generations are different. And what I learned in college 30 years ago, that was good then.
Right.
But this is a new day, and we better find some new things.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking about the millennial generation, one of our partner firms is a startup called Recurrence. You'll be hearing a lot about them in the future. And, I mean, this is a brilliant young entrepreneur who pioneered a work, again, at the Foster School at the University of Washington on the whole concept of taking business case studies into a gamification mode, because students learn more playing case studies via video games than they do watching them on TV with a boring professor, you know, who's trying their best to not be boring. But I mean, that's our future. That's where we're going. With all of, you know, Gallup's work on the, you know, recent employee engagement index that in the U.S. has us again at 70% disengaged, now 18% tell us that they hate their jobs, not to the boss, but the confidential survey.
Sure.
And the most common reason of hating their job is hating their boss. That gives a whole new element to the whole concept of engagement. So, Pat, tell us, what connection do you see between this employee engagement piece and a culture of ethics and values?
Well, first, let me start by saying 30 years ago or even 15 years ago, running companies, I never thought I would have a budget item called engagement or culture. Those are now serious budget items.
Right.
What we did is we built a wellness program that put operational engagement, employee wellness engagement, and put it all together and focused on that. Because what we learned is that engagement is what has made our culture. And it can't just be a one-sided fancy deal. We've gamified our wellness program, and we have an ongoing game of wellness and operational excellence.
That's awesome.
That the employees have just, they're thrilled over. But it was my learning about culture, experiencing having to try to change the culture, that helped us innovate, and we've created this. We're releasing this product into the market in November.
Awesome.
To other companies, but it has really been an eye-opening experience.
Wellness through gamification.
Wellness and culture through gamification. And everybody's talking about gamification, and we were doing this a year before it ever became really popular.
It's awesome.
Games are fun.
Well,
especially when you win.
The other, yeah, it is, especially when you win. You both are very competitive.
But we're not competitive.
Yeah, you are. That's why you're successful. Come on, it's partly why you're successful. But I will throw this out too, and not just, and back to the generational thing that you spoke about earlier. The gamification aspects create collaboration in a way that, in many ways, in companies that are not happening otherwise. that a millennial generation is used to and is growing towards. It's something that happened, you know, in education, in other areas, in other nations outside of America for years, is collaborative learning between generations, and not just the American way of, oh, you're 6 years old, so everybody in your class is 6 years old, but generational learning collaboratively, as well as what we've seen in with a lot of the companies that we've worked with in the past from Japan, that their education is very collaborative. And it's great that we're getting to that point.
Well, we've seen the millennials and the Gen Xers in our company teach the boomers right. how to be collaborative.
Right. That's amazing.
And that has been a dynamic that has really been a lot of fun to watch, because you see a lot of collaborative work today
yeah.
that we didn't see 10 years ago.
Amazing.
And it's a little unfair in my chair, because I get to sit back and look out over it today
right.
and see the change, where some of our own people don't even realize the change they've made or how far they've come.
Amazing.
But it is really something to see how that's revolutionizing the workplace.
Absolutely. We have 1 minute left, Pat. If you had a statement, a phrase, a thing you wanted to leave listeners with, or and leaders that are listening with, what would it be?
Well, I think it has to, my dad taught me a lot.
Yeah.
And if you always do what you've always done,
yep.
you can always get what you always got.
Exactly.
And that isn't good enough anymore.
That's right.
And leaders lead, and leaders need to start leading, because we need a lot of leaders in this country today.
That's yes, brilliant. We do.
It's brilliant. And yes, I love do. How you lived that out by, we need to make some changes. Somebody needs to come in and help me see what I can't see. That's a beautiful thing that you've communicated today.
Steve and his team did a phenomenal job with how they came in and did analytics for us. And those analytics made the difference. And as I've told Steve, are probably one of the big reasons where our company is today, because it gave us a foundation to work from and really solidified that this was something real.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Well, you're the leader who put your poster up on the wall and started working on it yourself first.
That's right.
That's the key.
It's awesome. All right, Pat Chestnut will be back. We need to have him back on the show. This is Zach Gander with Steve Gander of Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Email us, asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. Catch the podcast. We'll see you next show.